Chapter 6, A Rich and Royal Colony. One of the most remarkable South Carolinians of the 18th century was Eliza Lucas Pinckney. Her story is one of uncommon energy, intelligence, and courage. Eliza Lucas was born in 1723 in the West Indies, where her father was a sugar planter and an army officer. She went to school in London before moving with her family to a plantation near Charlestown. In 1739, when her father was recalled to the West Indies for military duty, he left 16-year-old Eliza in charge of his three plantations, her sick mother, a younger sister, and the slaves. Imagine the awesome responsibilities Eliza faced. She taught her sister and some slave children to read, and she set up a nursery for young slave children and a clinic for sick slaves. The slaves raised rice, but Eliza was willing to try other crops. She began to experiment with indigo seeds sent by her father. She grew the plants and tried various ways of processing them to get the dye just right. Eliza kept careful records and, after 4 years, developed techniques of producing a good quality dye that met the approval of buyers in England. Eliza generously shared her seeds and secrets with neighboring planters. They were quick to seize an opportunity for profit, so the raising of indigo took off rapidly. Many planters became wealthy growing indigo on land too dry for rice. However, the Revolutionary War ended sales to Britain, and the blue dye faded as a major product in South Carolina. Eliza Lucas and her family did not fade. Eliza married Charles Pinckney, a successful neighboring planter who was twice her age. They had two sons who lived to be adults and one daughter. The sons were educated in England, but came home to become leaders in the revolution against Britain. Both later ran for the office of President or Vice President of the United States. Eliza died of cancer in 1793 in Philadelphia, where she had gone for treatment. She was buried there, with President George Washington serving as a pallbearer. Eliza played an important role in the prospering South Carolina of the 18th century. Section 1. Growing as a Royal Colony. As you read, look for the rise of the Commons House under royal rule, the lasting effects of colonial government on our state, how the township plan and the great wagon road increased and diversified the upcountry population, growing differences between upcountry and lowcountry, terms, township plan, Scots-Irish, Pennsylvania-Dutch, Great Wagon Road. Under the new direct rule of the king, the government of South Carolina continued to be composed of a governor appointed by the king and a general assembly. This government served a growing and increasingly diverse population of Carolinians. The rise of the Commons House. Royal rule within the British Empire was quite lenient in the 18th century. The free men in the colony could control most of their own affairs within the framework of British law. The Commons House continued to grab more power when it could. In addition to handling colony-wide matters, it appointed local officials and controlled local affairs. By 1775, the Commons House had become the dominant factor in South Carolina's government, because it had the responsibility to collect taxes and decide how to spend government funds. The increased power of the Commons House was a small move toward more democracy. Just how small might be measured by the fact that only a tiny portion of the population could vote and hold office. Slaves, who composed a large majority of the population, had no legal rights, and white females and white servants were not considered worthy of a voice in government. Only white male property owners could vote, and only men who owned at least 500 acres of land and 10 slaves could hold office. South Carolina government inherited three long-lasting characteristics from its colonial experience: the belief that power should be in the hands of an upper class of property owners, control over other branches of government by the lower house of the General Assembly, control of local governments by the legislature. A diverse population. In South Carolina's first 60 years, population growth was rather slow, but population trends were already clear. The white population was very diverse, with many people coming from England, the West Indies, Ireland, Scotland, France, Switzerland, Germany, and the Netherlands. Each brought its distinct language, accents, cultural habits, food preferences, artistic taste, and work skills. The black population from Africa was just as diverse, with its many languages and other cultural characteristics from different sections of West Africa. This was the most rapidly growing part of the population. The Native Americans were sadly losing numbers rather than increasing. They were by far the smallest group of the three by 1730. The Township Plan. The colony's white population had grown from 3,800 in 1700 to 9,800 in 1730, while the black population had increased from 2,800 to 21,600. Meanwhile, the Indian population had fallen from 10,000 to 2,000. All these numbers are approximate, but they show trends that worried the white leadership in Charlestown. They were desperate to find ways to increase the proportion of whites in the population and make the slave owners safer. Governor Robert Johnson suggested a plan in 1731 to bring in more white settlers to balance the growing slave population and to provide a buffer, barrier or cushion, on the frontier against the Spaniards, French, and Indians. This township plan set aside several 6-square-mile tracts of land on the frontier beyond where any whites had already settled. The leaders offered Europeans financial assistance and free land to come to South Carolina. The township plan attracted 10 to 15,000 foreign settlers to the upcountry. Any place over 50 miles from Charlestown was considered upcountry in the 18th century. Because people settled in communities from a single nation, each township maintained some of the characteristics of their country of origin. For example, the settlers in Orangeburg and Amelia, present-day Calhoun County, were German, as were those in Saxe-Gotha, most of present-day Lexington County, and New Windsor in the North Augusta area. Williamsburg and Kingston, now the Conway area in Horry County, were mainly Irish and Scots-Irish, Presbyterian Scots who had lived in Northern Ireland. On the P.D. River, many Welsh settlers occupied the Welsh Tract. Most of these townships did not become permanent towns because the people tended to live on their farms. But the settlers who came did contribute to the aims of the Lowcountry leadership. They helped keep the proportion of slaves from getting even larger, and they helped provide that buffer against potential enemies. The new settlers supplied men for the militia that the colony depended upon in emergencies. A new neighbor. An even more important buffer between South Carolina and Spanish Florida was the new colony of Georgia. King George II granted Georgia to James Oglethorpe, a military officer and member of the English Parliament. Oglethorpe hoped to use Georgia both as a base of military operations against the Spaniards in St. Augustine and as a utopia, a perfect society, in which no one owned slaves or drank rum or owned more than 500 acres. The buffer worked for South Carolina. the utopia part did not work out. Soon Georgia looked very much like South Carolina, with large landowners who worked their slaves and drank rum to their heart's content. Other settlers of the upcountry. The largest population movement into the upcountry came in the 1750s and 1760s. Most of these new settlers came from colonies farther north, especially Pennsylvania and Virginia. The majority of the newcomers were of Scots-Irish descent. Their cultural influence and Presbyterian religion had a great influence in the upcountry. The second largest ethnic group was German, but often referred to as Pennsylvania Dutch. They placed their cultural stamp on many communities. Numerous Lutheran churches and place names in certain areas of the state testify to their influence. The difficult journeys of both groups of migrants were made easier by the creation of the Great Wagon Road from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to Augusta, Georgia, largely following an old Indian trail. The Great Wagon Road was one of the most traveled roads in the 13 colonies. Differences between upcountry and lowcountry. By the end of the colonial era in 1775, the population of South Carolina was nearly 180,000, almost equally split between upcountry and lowcountry. Nearly 80% of South Carolina's white people lived in the upcountry. The slave population in this area remained small for another several decades. The great differences in the new white population of the upcountry and the old white population of the lowcountry caused friction between the two. The Anglican Church was dominant in the lowcountry. The upcountry was dominated by dissenters of several denominations: Presbyterians, Lutherans, Baptists, and Quakers. Near the coast, many white families owned slaves and large plantations. In the upcountry, most were not slaveholders, but worked their own small farms. Whites of the lowcountry dominated the government of the colony. The white majority in the upcountry had very little voice in their government. The stage was set for conflict. Do you remember? Number 1. Define in sentence form, Township Plan, Scots-Irish, Great Wagon Road. Number 2. What was the primary reason that the Commons House won superiority in colonial government? Number 3. What were the two main purposes for founding a Georgia colony, and which of those worked out?